You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey, everyone, and welcome back to another episode, the 8th episode of Take a Bow Podcast. I'm Sydney Lucas.
And I'm Eli Tokash.
8 episodes. Wow, that's crazy.
I know, it's going along. I'm proud of us.
I'm proud of us, too.
And guys, thank you for listening. Like, I'm glad we're getting such great feedback and, you know, people seem to be enjoying it. So that's making us want to keep on doing this.
Yeah, we're so grateful for all of your support and all of your suggestions and feedback and everything. And yeah, feel free to DM us on our Instagram at Take A Bow Podcast. You can DM us with any questions or any questions for guests that we may have on. And yeah, and you can keep up with the podcast there.
Recently, we've been gearing our Instagram to be just more interactive with the followers. So we'll be putting out polls and surveys and stuff like that. And you can also, we'll also start doing this thing where we'll announce the guest and we can be like, do you have any certain questions that we can ask or all of that. So follow along at Take A Bow Podcast and you can start just being more part of our episodes. And we'll give you shout outs if we use your question. So
go on over to Instagram and follow us, everyone. Our guest today is the fantabulous Max von Essen. He is like a ball of positive energy. He's the kindest, most just like positive and beautiful soul. Like one of the most beautiful souls I've ever met. I really adore him.
So here's the thing with Max. You say his name is Max von Essen. When you hear that name, he is everything. In that name, like you hear the name and you just think of the most like incredible and like just proper and like insane. Yeah, like that name is like a famous name. That's supposed to be like a name that's supposed to be known. And
that is a star what he's doing, name. Like
with his resume and everything like that, like you can tell just by the name, it just makes sense, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So
he's everything you would expect and more.
Yeah, truly. He's the best, and he's insane. His resume is insane. Tony-nominated actor for American in Paris, as well as, like, 8 other Broadway shows. He's incredible, and he gives some really great advice.
Yeah, if you are in a situation where you're getting down on yourself about auditions and not getting the stuff that you wanted, or you're beating yourself up for just, you know, anything and everything, and or you just need like a boost in positivity, you're going to love this episode and you're going to fall in love with Max if you haven't already.
Yeah, so let's turn it over to Max. Okay, everybody. So on today's episode of Take a Bow, we have someone I've personally looked up to since I met him almost 4 to 5 years ago. This actor is a Tony Grammy and Outer Critic nominee. Max von Essen, everybody.
Woo! Welcome.
Thank you.
We are so excited to have you on.
Well, I'm really excited to be here too, especially after that intro. I was like, wow, I must be really cool. This guest sounds really interesting.
Well, you are very interesting. I mean, you've been in a handful of Broadway shows. What is it, seven?
Seven now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And one of them I did twice.
Insane.
Yeah. Well, I hope I add a lot more to that. But yeah, it's crazy when I sit and think about it.
That doesn't even include off Broadway or tours or regional. That's just Broadway, right?
Yeah, totally. And I've done a couple of national tours and some off Broadway things. And yeah, it's weird. Like when I was your age, I was like not in the business at all. It just seemed like such a faraway dream. And it's all I ever wanted to do. So, and it really didn't seem possible because, you know, there just wasn't social media. I didn't feel like connected to Broadway actors. They just sort of seemed like these people that, I don't know, we're living this dream that I didn't know how to access it. So to have done this many shows, let alone, you know, like one or two, you know, that blew my mind just when I got like my first Broadway debut. So now at this point, I'm like, whoa, how did this happen? How did I fool everyone in New York? How did I fool these casting directors?
Oh my God. Your Broadway debut was Les Mis, right?
No, actually, it was bit earlier than that. It was there was a revival.
Was it Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yeah, Jesus Christ Superstar in 2000. Oh, can you believe it's 20 years ago already? I was in the ensemble of that and I understudied Jesus, but it almost seems like Les Mis because a couple years later, it was so crazy. They were the original production of Les Mis was finally closing after like 17 years. And I joined that production in the ensemble and understudied Marius. So like if you look on IBDB and all that stuff, it'll actually have that production first, I think, because that opened up before any other Broadway show I had ever done. You know, so it's kind of weird. So it's weird to say like I was in the original production of Les Mis, but in the 17th year, you know, there are a lot of like casts from the beginning to the point that I joined, but it's kind of cool to be able to like say like that I joined the production that I saw as a kid. Like it was one of the first shows I had ever seen and I was blown away. In fact, when I saw it, the Eponine understudy was on and I remember looking at my playbill years later and it was Sutton Foster as Eponine. And I was like, who is this girl? She was so amazing. And then years later, I'm like, oh, duh, Sutton Foster. Like, so crazy.
Foster.
I know, just amazing.
Wow. As you said in the beginning, you thought Broadway was just kind of like this faraway dream. But when was the first time that you went, I want to do that?
Oh, it was literally like the first time I saw a Broadway show. I think I was in like seventh grade or something. And I saw Dreamgirls. I mean, like I'm old. So I saw Dreamgirls. Now I didn't see I didn't see the first cast. So I didn't see Jennifer Holliday do it, but I saw Lilias White do that role. Do you know who that is? She's amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know if it was like this for you guys. I mean, you guys started as kids. So I don't know if you even remember that feeling. See, I didn't, I performed as a kid, but not, you know, professionally in any way. So to go into the city and to, you know, go to TKTS with my parents and to get tickets to the show and having never sat in a Broadway theater before, I mean, I was totally mesmerized, like completely mesmerized. And then, so I knew I wanted to do that, but you know, it's Dreamgirls. So there weren't exactly like that many roles for me in that show. But then the third Broadway show, then I saw Cats after that. And then after that, I saw Les Mis, that production I was literally just talking about with Sutton Foster going on that day as Eponine. And that's when I was like, oh, not only do I want to do this, but I think maybe I can do this because I really saw myself up there. Like there were all these just, you know, cause I don't dance. So I was like, oh my God, they're not dancing. You know, these are just like young guys singing and being really passionate and like singing their faces off. And I just, you know, like I said, I don't know that I thought at that moment that I really would be able to do it, but it just seemed like a little bit more attainable that I would at least try to do it. And I would, whether I made it to Broadway, I would still just do it. You know, I would perform, I would sing, and I would just be in musical theater probably forever in some way because I was so in love with it.
You know what? You're right. You could do it, and you did, because 7 Broadway shows later, here you are. You have made it. You are an icon, to be honest, and you're someone that both Eli and I look up to.
Aww.
For sure.
Oh my God. No one's ever said icon to me. That's so crazy.
You're an icon.
You know what's crazy is like, once I started doing this, like I never, even as a kid, when I sort of dreamed of it, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, I wanna bow last, or I wanna make a lot of money, or I wanna sign autographs. It literally was, I was always looking at like those guys in Les Mis in the ensemble, and I was like, I just wanna be up there. We wanna be part of a show. And then even when I started, you know, I started booking things after college, like things were good, but like I said, my first Broadway show was in the ensemble of Jesus Christ Superstar and understudying. And which was amazing, but it wasn't like I was the leading role of a show. You know, if things just sort of happened, I don't know, kind of slowly in a way, and they just like slowly started building up, and I just wanted to be a working actor. And then I started to realize after a couple of years that I could do that, that, wow, I'm like just working and working. So I don't really believe you when you call me an icon, but I have always wanted to be someone that like people could look up to and be like, oh, that you could do it. And not only can you do it, but you don't have to like be a star. Like I don't have to go into the business to be a star. There's so many levels in this business where people can just work and be working actors and go to regional shows and off Broadway shows and do concerts and do Broadway. You know, it's just, it's not all about just the stars, right? It's as you guys see, there's such a business and there's so many levels to it. And it's really cool. It just shows people like, oh, I can be like, that's really cool. I can make a career as an actor. My parents were wrong. I can actually maybe pay bills. Like I'm so proud that I'm doing that.
Absolutely.
It seems like even years after that you decided to become an actor, you're still working nonstop.
Yeah.
Nonstop.
Well, yeah, I mean, it stopped right now, but we'll get through this crazy time. And I have had periods, you know, don't get me wrong, there have been periods where a couple years at a time I was like, "Oh boy, you know, what's going on, or I'm really nervous, or things weren't clicking." But somehow that always led to then a really great period, because I remember years ago, there was a time where I just wasn't booking, like, and I was down to the final group, you know, 2 or 3 people for a big new Broadway show. And like casting directors would say, "Well, don't you understand? It just means you're so close to like a big break." And it's hard to accept that, because you're like, "Yeah, but I need a job." But then you have to realize, like, wait a second, I was just down to 2 other people for a Broadway show? Whoa. Like, how many people would love to be that close, or, you know, nearly get a job like that? It's hard because you need the job, but you realize, oh, I'm really like a part of this. I'm someone who's competing for these roles. So this is a good thing. And then I knew like things would click at some point. So they, you know, there are ups and downs, and I haven't always constantly worked, but overall, when you look back at it, you go, oh yeah, it has been a you know, steady work, and like I'm really proud of that. Like you said, it's just like, it's just, I mean, it's such a good feeling to know that like I've made this career as a working actor. Like there are a million, well, hundreds of millions of people be like, "Wait, who's he?" You know, like, who is Max von Essen? But for me and in this industry, and for people who know, it's like really, it's really an accomplishment to sort of, you know, make a career. And so I in no way am I bragging. Like I just remind myself though, because you got to be proud. You can't always look ahead of you or look at other people. You have to look at what you've done and go, wow, look at that. This has been really good. I've worked hard and I've been really lucky, and I'm just very grateful.
Yeah. That's very wise words.
I'm an icon. I'm an,
I,
so, an icon. Icons, you know, give very wise words.
Exactly. If you, I have, this is kind of a double question. Mm-hmm. If you could go back to when you were 12 and you saw your first Broadway show, mm-hmm. and you're full of doubt, like, oh no, I could never do that, what would you tell 12-year-old you? And then kind of along those same lines, going back to when you got so close to the, you got in the final callbacks and you got so close to making it, but you didn't. What would you tell your younger self in both of those situations?
Oh my gosh. Well, I would definitely say to my younger self that don't give up on your dreams, you know, no matter what they are, because even if they don't, you know, they might be so insanely huge, or like they may see, people make fun of you, be like, what are you kidding? You know what I mean? But if it's like a worthy dream, or for me, like to be a Broadway actor, well, what I would need to do to achieve that, you can't, there's nothing that I would do on that journey that I would regret. You know what I mean? Studying, taking lessons, joining, you know, a musical or play, working with other people, that kind of teamwork, learning that kind of discipline, all those things like that I would use towards that goal. I would never regret any of that. Even if the dream maybe didn't pan out, who cares? Like, have that dream and you really can do it. And especially because a dream doesn't just happen, right? You've got to work towards it. So give yourself that boost of that confidence. Like, don't listen to other people. Work towards that dream. You can achieve it. And even if you don't, so you tried. Oh, so you studied. Yeah. Oh, so you had goals. Oh, so you worked your butt off. Like, these are great things. So I would say, I would have told myself back then, like, don't even worry. Just like, you love this, go for it. And then, you know, for the what I would have told myself, like the times I was close to those jobs, it's probably similar to what I was saying before. It's like, well, if I'm that close, you know, you do have to find the positives to even a situation that may seem really negative. Okay, I needed work. I really wanted that job. I didn't get it. Oh my gosh, I cried a little about it. But then I realized, yeah, but I have no regrets. I worked so hard. I went into that room and I gave them everything I had. Like, I'm really proud of that moment. And sure, I didn't get that job, but look how close I came, and my hard work paid off. So next week, that casting director might have something, go, oh, remember Max from that last project? Remember how good he was, how hard he worked? And that constantly happens. It might be a week later, it might be 3 years later. But if you go in there and with doing, you know, prepared and doing the best you possibly can, it pays off. So it's hard. Life is hard and this career is hard without a doubt, but there's always a positive side to even the toughest situations. And you don't have to find it immediately, and it's okay to be sad, and it's okay to mourn something like that or not getting a job. But after you've, you know, spent a day or so, it then get yourself up and go, oh wow, but look what I did, and find the positive, and then take that into the future with you.
You know what? Sure. You're so right. One good impression can come back around years later and bless you.
Absolutely.
I got to the final callbacks of Matilda, and that was an 11 callback thing.
Oh my gosh.
Insane, right? It lasted. It lasted months and months on end. And around that time, I was doing the lab of Fun Home. And it was very, like, it was the first time that it ever stood up in front of an audience.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary, and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that With brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
And I wanted Matilda more than anything in the world. It was the original Matildas, and I wanted it so bad. But I got to the final callbacks. There were only 8 girls left, and they were picking four girls. But I didn't get it because I was a half an inch too tall. However, if I had gotten it, I wouldn't have carried on with Fun Home, which brought me along to Off-Broadway and Broadway. So you are so right. It's sometimes there are blessings in disguises like that, where things happen for – that's kind of the motto that I live by, like things happen for a reason. I think that's – it's if you don't get something, just, you know, it's fine. Brush it off. Yes. It happened for a reason.
Totally. And here's
never know.
And one thing I look at, like, because it is hard when those things don't happen. And if you didn't give it your all and you weren't prepared, then you do have to reassess and you do have to say, okay, I didn't screw up, but I made some mistakes and I have some things that, wow, I just learned about and I need to work on, right? But if you went in there and gave it your all and you were prepared and you coached on it and you knew the music, then there's nothing, and you went in there and you know you showed yourself in the best light possible, then that's all you can do. You know what I mean? And like I said, if there's certain things you didn't do, and then you have to look at yourself and be like, okay, well, I learned a real lesson from that. But when you do what you need to do and you're prepared and you share your talents in that room, that's all you can do. And you had to leave knowing, like, my gosh, I was slightly too tall, but I did my absolute best. And then look what happened in the future. And that's how I felt about that time where I won't even say the couple of shows that I came down to the end for, because I don't really like to put it out there. I don't want necessarily the guys who did get the roles to go, oh my gosh, I got it. You know, I beat Max out. I feel so bad, or this or that. But there were several Broadway shows over a 3-year period that it was like I was the second choice or in the final callbacks with 3 people, something like that. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there was a Les Mis revival, and someone was leaving, the guy who was playing Enjolras, and I was like, oh my gosh, this wasn't even on my radar. And they asked me to come in, and it was same casting director I had been in for a couple of these Broadway shows. And I just like went in there and killed it and got the show. And I replaced someone in Les Mis, and it wasn't, you know, my first choice. I was really looking to, you know, do new shows, but that's not what was happening. But then I got this, and I'm telling you, it like completely re-energized me, revived my spirit. Les Mis was one of the shows I fell in love with as a kid. So now here I was as a lead in Les Mis, getting to sing this awesome music every night. And so now I was having great auditions during the day, and I was doing readings, and because I was just like totally re-inspired again. It really kicked me off into this. And then from that was, you know, that revival was like 2007 to 2008. And literally like the last 10 to 12 years, I have not stopped working. Like I've just gone from national tours to Broadway to then I started doing the readings and workshops of An American in Paris. And then I, you know, did, you know, Anastasia, and I did the first plays. I'd never done a play before in the city. So things just, because of the time, yes, I wasn't getting those jobs during that period of like 2 years, but I was going in there and showing them what I could do. I just wasn't getting it, but I was doing really good work, and it paid off. And then it kicked me into this period of time where I actually can say that like for the last 12 years, I have like not stopped working. So incredible. You know, yeah, you just gotta go out there and do your best.
Especially because like when you do go to the finals and you don't get a role, it's easy to get discouraged because you made it that far, but then they didn't want you out of those few people. But at the end of the day, it's like your talent can only get you so far. After that, it's looks. It's what your family looks like. Are you too tall? Or whatever it is. It's pretty amazing. And it's hard to like think that other negative way instead of looking at that in a positive way. Like at the end of the day, when I made it that far, it was almost out of my control.
Totally. And something I always say to people, because you can't, you know, I like to be really honest. I don't think you should like deny your feelings, or I don't think you should be like, I'm not going to be sad. I'm going to get up and I'm going to forget about them. No, it's okay. Like this business is really hard. Life is really hard. But my opinion is that like, give it its moment, And because you did work hard. And the reason you're sad is because you wanted it and you worked hard because you cared about it. So you put in everything you had. And, you know, Sydney, like going, you know, for several months auditioning for a show and having 11 callbacks or something, I've had similar situations too. That's a lot of time and a lot of heart and a lot of hard work. And you can't just, you know, move on and erase that. So I always say, yeah. Give it its time. Let yourself mourn it. It's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad because you cared about it. You wanted it. But then keep an eye on like how long you're sad, whether it's a few hours or a couple of days, and then like start to release it and go, okay, time to get back up and show the world what I can do and look towards the next job. But I really say that you can allow a little bit of, you know, sadness and mourning, because if you just, you know, ignore all that stuff, you're going to hold it inside and that's not healthy. So like address it, but then, you know, give it a little bit of time, but then pick up and move on and realize that like you did your best and put it towards the next project.
Absolutely, because that doesn't serve you in the end.
Yeah.
And I think you should be proud of yourself. You should accept it. But I also think you kind of should forgive it, because I feel like sometimes what happens is you kind of blame yourself. Just, mm-hmm. you know, it's not, first of all, it's not your fault. But I think just forgiving that, maybe forgiving yourself for anything you thought you did wrong, I think that's very freeing.
Totally.
So,
and if you did some things wrong, that's okay too. We're human. And then you can learn from that. And then you could bring it to one of your teachers or a friend and go, oh, wait, you know, I did do this, or I forgot, you know, this, all the lines in this scene. And wow, maybe I didn't work on that scene as much as I should have, you know, or maybe I have to figure out how to ways to control, because I get very nervous even still with auditions and like one time, like if it's something that's like one night only, I get very nervous. So, you know, then, okay. So explore mm-hmm. different things. Explore, is it meditation, or do you need to be prepared more so that the nerves don't get in the way? Whatever it is, like, it's okay to learn and address those things. But when you are doing your best, you can't, you know, you can't punish yourself too much.
So, Max von Essen, you...
The icon.
That's me.
The icon that you are. You were nominated for a Tony Award.
Yes. Remember that season?
For an I remember that season. That was insane.
Oh, I know.
For An American in Paris. How did it feel? When and where were you when you learned that you were nominated? And how did it feel?
Oh my God. I mean, it's like hard to even like express it. Like, 'cause it was so surreal. First of all, I told myself, I was like, I'm not getting up early. I'm not watching the announcements on New York One or whatever it was. I'm just not doing it. I'm going to bed. I'm sleeping through it. I couldn't sleep at all. Like, I was tossing and turning all night. And I don't think, like, of course I wanted it, but like we've been talking, like, I've been working for a long time, and to me it became more about working as an actor, not like awards and stuff. So I swear to you that I that's not how I was going into An American in Paris. Like, it's not what I was thinking about. But then, you know, like they announced like the Outer Critics Circle and the Drama Desks, and I was like, uh-oh, this is looking real good. And now I was like, oh my gosh, now if I don't get a nomination, I will kind of be bummed. So I was here at home, and it's like a little duplex, and I was upstairs, and I was staying in bed, and my boyfriend at the time, we're no longer together, but he was so excited, and he got up early and he was watching New York One. And I was like, oh God, oh no, I know he's watching it. I couldn't sleep. And I just hear him scream so loud. And I just sort of sat in bed and I whispered to myself, I was like, I got it. And it really was the most incredible feeling. And this is so cheesy, but at the time I was doing one of those Broadway.com vlogs. You know, have you guys ever done them? Like, there's so much work and you're carrying this camera around. You feel like such an idiot. But, and it was like a lot of work. I was doing it from opening week of An American in Paris through the Tonys. Like, it was a crazy like 2 month period. And I couldn't believe I had this camera around. I felt like such a tool, but I got to capture this period. And I remember like turning my camera on and, oh my gosh, I'll have to like look for that again. But I sort of captured that moment. I think I was crying and I was just like, oh my God, you guys, it happened. Like, I got this like unattainable dream as a kid is here. Like, it's really happening. And then people like were telling me, oh my gosh, you know, when I didn't win, like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I was like, sorry. Like, I was like, oh, I won. I was like, are you kidding? This was like the greatest year of my life. Like, it really was. Like, I was loving doing the show every night. It was successful. Most critics liked it, but like, and it got a lot of nominations. Like, so not only was I loving it, but other people seemed to be loving it, and it was being kind of celebrated and all part of the award season. Every aspect of it was like a total dream. So it was surreal. Like, I still, you know, I haven't actually thought about it in a long time till you asked this question, but sort of going through it now in my head, I can't believe it. I still can't believe it.
No.
Right?
I completely understand.
I'm sure you've had to talk about this a couple of times. Maybe you already have on this podcast, but what was like the quick, well, give me like the quick version of yours. Like, where were you and everything that happened?
Of when I discovered I was nominated.
Yeah.
So I had my whole family here. I had my two brothers, my mom and my dad. And we were upstairs in the living room. We purposefully were like, we're going to watch this. And they started playing on the TV somewhere. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, we're going to stop like airing the Tony nominations. We're going to go to some other news. And I go, no. And we have to like rush to go online. Like, no, we can't miss this. And luckily we found something that was live streaming online so we could watch it. So we're all kind of huddled. I have the video. We took a video of it. But we're kind of all kind of huddled together around the computer and we're just watching it. And they announced one name. I think they announced Victoria Clark. And then they announced Judy Kuhn, who is my mother in the show. And I freaked out. And I think that. And then I think they announced my name. I am positive the neighbors thought someone was being murdered in our apartment because all five of us just started screaming. And then like, it wasn't even that we started screaming. And then Ruthie Ann Miles, who was in A Key and I with my brother Jake, she got nominated and we started screaming even louder. And then Emily Skeggs got nominated and then our building practically exploded with screams. And then we all did like this group hug and I barely remember it. It was a Tuesday, right? And then we had to go immediately to the two-show-day Wednesday morning press jump.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was insane.
It's work. Like, they really like make you do so much. And then you go do two shows after that crazy long morning. But it was like, I mean, I was on, everyone's like, are you holding up okay? Like, are you tired? I was like, are you kidding? This is like, I was flying. Although I would run into your dad, Michael Cerveris, you know, and because at that point, I think he had like seven nominations or something insane. And, he was always such a gentleman too. He's like, it seemed like it still like doesn't get old. Like, it's just so cool. It's still like this magical experience. I'll never forget it. Never, ever.
I wouldn't have been able to do it without Michael. Because I was freaking out. I was so excited, but then also I learned that they were doing my solo as the performance. I was really nervous, but luckily I had Beth and Michael. And we'll do a whole other podcast and be talking about the actual day of the Tony Awards, which was a roller coaster to say the least. but yeah, Michael, I kind of really leaned on and relied on for that entire experience is pretty insane, but he was always there and I felt comfortable and he just really encouraged me to do my best. He was like, yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Speaking of like Broadway icons, I mean, Michael Cervis, he's just such a class act, so phenomenal. Every performance he takes on, and I mean, I don't know about Fun Home, but he never when I did Evita with him and he was Perón, he never missed a performance. Like, he's just unbelievably,
I don't think he missed
like,
a
strong.
Fun Home
yeah.
At all.
I mean, I think maybe he finally took a vacation, but like he's just so, I couldn't say enough about him. He's just such a class act. That's all I could say. I look up to him.
I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
He's like one of, he's like a father figure of mm-hmm. mine. He's like one of, like a mentor of mine. So I love him so, so, so much. This turned into a podcast, a fangirling Michael Cerveris podcast.
Hey, you do a whole podcast on that. Hey.
Oh, for sure.
He's actually coming on soon.
He's coming on very soon. We just confirmed today. So we're very excited.
Max, so I met you during the a small performance. Like, it was a few performances, like two or three.
Yeah, but it was a big, small performance.
Yeah, it was. Of Secret Garden.
Yeah.
And I must say, like, that was – we weren't entirely together because it seemed like everyone in that cast was also doing a show at the time. Mm-hmm. So everyone was like, rehearsing crazy. All the different times. Yeah, and then it wasn't until we actually, like, got into the theater where we were all able to hang out as a cast. And it really – it was, like, just a few days. And I feel like we all just got, like, super close and – hit it off immediately.
Oh, I know. Totally.
I remember one of the stories that kind of for me was just like, wow, this guy is like so cool, because I saw you in American in Paris uh-huh. and I was like, wow, this is insane. And then you were like sitting next to me in like the little dressing room, but it wasn't really a dressing room. It was like a room. And you were just like there. You're like salad, and you were just talking to me, and you were like, oh, so cool. And you were like talking about Instagram and like trying to be hip with me. and like, you were just like making me feel like so welcomed in like one of you guys, especially because I was like the only boy kid. And I was like, this guy is the coolest person I've ever met.
I remember like loving you too. I was like, this kid is so fun. I was like, he's my new little brother. But we were joking around about Instagram, like, let's get each other more followers. And we, like, did posts. And we're like, I think you got me a lot more followers. This is like Instagram was just starting out.
Oh,
I was like, who's this cool kid getting me 100 followers?
Ooh.
No, but wasn't that that production, like, so for the people out there, we did this small, like, kind of like anniversary production of The Secret Garden for, I forget what the charity it was for, to be honest right now. But Rebecca Luker reprised her role. And like what, like 25 years later or something? And it was like she could have, it was like she did it the day before. She was so luminous and effortless, and her voice is just like still so perfect. I couldn't believe I was doing The Secret Garden with Rebecca Luker. Like, it was just so crazy. And we were doing, and it was hard to, I remember actually, I mean, I was the brother, Neville Craven, and it wasn't that much material, but it was hard because I was in American in Paris at the time, and I didn't realize like we had to memorize it. Like, we only did it for two nights, but we had to be totally off book, and it was really hard, but it turned out so beautiful. Like that show, God, I actually would really love to, you can't do it anymore, but although you could be Dickon or something, but yeah. I would love to do that show. Oh man, that show is so gorgeous.
It's
so funny
show.
That you remember that, because that was another one of our like little moments that I remember, like the one rehearsal that we actually had together. We were like, we were watching someone rehearse, and I believe it was Rebecca and probably Gabby. And we were just sitting at a table, and we were like, I don't know how to memorize all these lines by our performance and all of that. And like, it's still like, when I'd come off stage after being doing a song or something, I would come off stage and learn my lines for the next scene, because I still wasn't like, I was still like, God, this is crazy. I feel like I don't know it.
Yeah, you did.
But it worked out.
I don't think ever did learn all your lines, but you did a great, no.
I definitely did.
But you had a lot. It was a lot of material, man. If I don't have like a full like rehearsal period, it's really hard for me to just learn, especially for these like benefit things or auditions. Like we were talking about earlier, like I still get nervous for those things, because if I have to like self rehearse myself or like spend time alone, it's just more difficult, you know. But when you have like an extended rehearsal time and you're rehearsing from 10 to 6 every day, then for me it's like no problem, and then I don't get nervous because I just feel really ready. But when you have to kind of do it fast like that, or those benefit performances, whew, those things still freak me out. They still make me really nervous.
I mean, wow. you had an excuse though too. Like, I didn't have to learn any of the staging because I was just in a wheelchair just being pushed around.
That's right. So, sheesh, what was your excuse?
Yeah, literally. I just had to like remember a few words, you know? It was a big deal.
No, but it was hard because, you know, it was a short, you know, just a couple of rehearsals here and there. And like you said, everyone was doing other projects. So you barely had everyone in the room, you know? It was just kind of piecing together like, okay, imagine so-and-so is there or like, you know, those things are hard.
Curtis did an amazing job with that.
Oh my gosh, she did a great job. Like I said, that was really beautiful. I was so happy I did it, you know, and really the main reason I did it is when they told me Rebecca Luker was doing it, I was like, yeah, how awesome. And then it turned out to be one of the, just such a cool experience in general. And everyone was really good and they did a beautiful job with it. So I was really glad I did it.
Yeah. Sydney actually did a production similar at that time with Daisy Egan.
I was about to say it was such a weird coincidence because Gabby Pizzolo, who was my understudy in Fun Home, who later took over for me in Fun Home, after I left Fun Home, she did Secret Garden where you guys were, and then I went and did Secret Garden with Oscar, who was my brother in Fun Home, at the Lincoln Center with Daisy Egan. Isn't that such a weird coincidence?
Oh my gosh, that's right. There were two like at the same, you know, as we're sitting here, I'm like, gosh, I wonder if Sydney's ever played that part. She must have. That would have been so incredible. I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. I think that happened because wasn't it like a big anniversary year? Was it 25 years or something? Is that why? So there were like multiple productions.
Yeah,
really cool.
Yeah, it was directed by Safford Arima. It had Ben Platt, Ramin Caramelou, Cheyenne Jackson, Daisy Egan,
never heard of him.
Who are Ramin, who has some podcast on Broadway Podcast Network. Shout out. it was luckily we were allowed to have our binders, but you know, for the most part, we had to be mostly
cheaters.
I know.
No. Honestly, I mean, that's really how it almost should be. They really should be done like that because it's like, it's a lot to ask of actors like on their night off to be doing a big concert like that. But either way, like the show is, I'm sure your concert was so gorgeous too. That show is just so beautiful and
so there's something so magical about that show.
So magical. Oh yeah. I would do it tomorrow. Mm. Let's make it happen.
You know what? Let's all do it together. You play Uncle Archibald, you play Dick, and I'll play Martha.
You know what? I'm actually fine with a brother, Neville. Like, I don't know why. I mean, don't get me wrong, Archibald.
Oh, yeah. You could also play. Yeah. No, you can play either one. You can play both of them at the same time.
We're going to switch. It's going to be me and Ramin, and we're going to alternate.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Just putting it out there when Broadway comes back. It actually is it is a great idea. Like, I mean, I don't, regardless if it's me or someone else, but those male roles are really, if you can play one, the chances are you probably can sing and play the other. It would be interesting. I mean, I know they've done that in shows before where the two lead actors have switched, but I can't really think of a musical
idea
where they've done that. And I think it would just be kind of like a fun event to get like two actors into a musical or, you know, two actresses in another musical, but to kind of alternate. Like, right? They've done that in plays, but I can't picture like a musical where they did that.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
You know,
raise
what?
The money.
We'll put it out into the universe. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
So much. This has been such an amazing. You're genuinely the sweetest person. You're an icon, as we've already established. thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
You're incredible. That's pretty much.
Seriously, thank you. You guys are amazing. I love both of you and I love both of your work truly. And like I said, all I've wanted to ever be was just a working actor. And the fact that you would even want to talk to me makes me feel really special and like I'm part of the community, which is I ever wanted to be. So it's like you guys know, I mean, it's such a family. 100%. We all just like reach out, rely on each other. And I love working and I can't wait till we're all back on the stage again.
And you know, the fact that you would come on and talk to us is also makes us feel really special too.
Your story, your career is everything is so inspiring.
Well, thank you. Sure. Seriously an honor. I appreciate it. Thank you guys.
Take a bow, Max von Essen. Oh my God. This guy is incredible. It wasn't just the way he talks and the way his essence and his voice and everything. Isn't it just so satisfying?
Get it? Essen. Max von Essence. Oh my God. Max, we just found your perfume name. If you ever make a cologne or a perfume, call it Max von Essence.
That's perfect. It needs to be a company.
Oh my gosh. Wait, I just fell in love with that though. It's okay. You don't, you can have that. You don't have to, that's all yours. That name's all yours. But like, oh my gosh. He is so positive. He's honestly like a motivational speaker. If he decided that he wanted to be a motivational speaker, I would go to like every one of his events.
Yeah. And the knowledge that he has, because he's literally experienced quite literally everything.
Yeah.
So he's like a whole wealth of knowledge. And if you can't tell from that interview, you should re-listen. He's just so special. And I was so fortunate to meet him and work with him for this short amount of time. And I, like, literally within 2 days just fell in love with this guy and like clung on to him and learned so much from him through not even a full month, really. So I love you, Max, and I'm so happy that you were able to come on. And it's so cool. I know we've mentioned this before, but just to like talk to your friends about like stuff that you wouldn't normally talk about is just so fun.
Yeah. Oh, it's the best.
Yeah, like I literally, like just in this, Sydney and I both know you way more than we ever would have, you know, now that we interviewed you. So thank you for that.
Yeah. And so I met Max during the 69th annual Tony Awards, during the 2015 Tony Awards. He was an American in Paris. I was in Fun Home.
Oh, that was the same year.
Yeah, that was the same year. And
oh, wow. That's awesome.
He is just like from the get-go the most warm and welcoming person, and he just makes you feel like so comfortable. And you know, the Tony Award season, it's a lot, it's very hectic, and sometimes it can be very intimidating, but having people like him just to talk to and just to like bring you, you know, like back down to earth and just have a normal, like connected conversation with someone, and someone who is so warm and kind and you can tell so loving. It's so refreshing and it's so comforting. And,
sure.
And you know, Max is the epitome of that.
Okay. So who hasn't watched Hamilton yet? Can we talk about it?
Yes, let's talk about it.
Okay, if you haven't watched Hamilton yet, please go do it. It's on Disney Plus. I'm sure someone you know has it. Just log into their account. It's so worth it.
I'm sure they won't mind.
This is the epitome of art. You know, just everything about it. And, you know, originally, it's kind of like hard to follow with the rap and how they're talking and how it's just so fast and you really have to pay attention. But with the way they did it in the film, I thought it was so clear, each word.
Oh, they did such an incredible job. There are so many things that I didn't notice in the Broadway version that I noticed in this version. I was like, oh my gosh, that's so genius.
Well, that's another thing that I love, because when you're watching a show on Broadway, right, there's just so much going on a stage. So obviously you're going to miss a couple things unless you see it like a billion times. So with this, you know, they had the power to highlight the necessary moments in each number of the show. Mm-hmm. And those moments are sometimes missed. But the way that they did it with the film was just so brilliant that you literally were able to catch everything and anything. So, I mean, I've literally watched it 3 times now. Again, I'm fangirling over Hamilton, but it deserves all the praise that it's getting, you know?
Yeah, I watched it once the day that it came out, and then I just watched it again last night with my parents.
The cast
is so incredible. And can we just take a moment? I mean, all of the cast is like beyond incredible, and I just they're all so unique and talented in their own right. Let's also just like take a moment to appreciate Jonathan Groff, who, thank God for the close-ups, because he has so many emotions and thoughts, and he just uses his face and his body so well. Oh, dude, Jonathan Groff is incredible, and so is every single person in the cast. The entire cast is number one. They're top notch. Please watch it.
And if Jonathan Groff is playing King George and you're sitting front row, you may never want to shower yourself again because you will get his saliva on you. So yeah, thank God for those close-ups because
I loved it so much.
The videos and the memes and everything going on with him and his songs are just incredible. I'm so happy about it. And go him, because obviously he was like, yeah, let's do a close-up of it. Like, yeah, you could do it. And yet he still like will go 100% and let the spit fly, you know?
Mm-hmm. And like the whole cast just goes 110% every single time. Oh my God.
Well, Anthony Ramos really sticks out in this film. Every girl is like fan. Every like person is absolutely infatuated with this guy right now.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. and then a lot of people are just now finding out that he's engaged.
I think he's engaged to Jasmine, the person who plays Peggy, and also Mariah Reynolds. Which, oh my gosh, if you like look at some of the videos together, they're the cutest.
Oh my god, they're literally goals.
Oh, they're goals. They're so in love. It's so beautiful. And then obviously not just those two people, like literally like Lynn and David and Leslie. Oh my gosh, and Oaks and Pippa and
even that ensemble, dude, like
the ensemble is incredible.
It's incredible because they're all featured.
Oh, and Chris Jackson. Oh my goodness.
Oh my god. That ensemble. Well, first of all, this cast is, if you haven't read about them, they're the nicest people. Mm-hmm. And I read an article and they were like, you know, we put our egos aside from the first day and we knew going into this that it was going to be an equal show. It was going to be everyone should be treated the same. Everyone has their own features. And they were just like, this is a team effort because literally, except for like Dear Theodosia and Burn, and there's a couple others, but literally almost every number, the ensemble's there.
Yeah, we wouldn't be nearly the same show. It wouldn't be the same show at all without the ensemble.
Yeah, it's incredible. And what the director and Lynn and even Andy Blankenbuehler, the choreographer, like what they did with the bullet.
Oh my god, that was my favorite part of the entire show. That was a specific part where I was like, oh my gosh, this is genius. Oh, so for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, should we give it away? I mean, it's a small part in the show, but like I never noticed it before.
I mean, listen, it's no spoiler. Like, no. Obviously, someone dies. It's history.
Yeah. So this is like around the part where the revolution, it's amping up, you know, and people are starting to die. And this is sometime after King George comes out and basically threatens everyone. One of the British soldiers, he takes his gun and he points it at Hamilton, who has his head down writing. And then a dancer comes, and when the British soldier fires the bullet, this dancer takes the bullet in her hand and runs it over to Hamilton and glides the bullet right across his head, and then he looks up. And that goes to show that, like, everyone is, like, this close. Like, everyone is, like, there's so many almost death moments. And I think that's a theme that runs throughout the show. Hamilton is like, I imagine death almost like it's a memory. So, it just goes to show that there are many times where these people, like, almost die. Wait, I mean, it's history, so like we all know how the story goes.
The bullet is in it several times. So this ensemble member, Ariana DeBose, who was in Pippin with me, and she's going to be in West Side Story and The Prom in theaters soon. She is the bullet, but if you realize, I read something, and she's the only ensemble member to die. And then every person who dies, before they die, they either talk to her, like her spirit, I guess you could say, because she's dead, or they shake hands with her.
What?
So, like, yeah, no, there's so many underlying, like, underlying messages in the show that, like, just that little thing, like, how Philip flirts with death. Like, he flirts with her,
no
trying to
way.
Find the guy they go to duel with, and then he's the one that dies, like, flirting with her. So he was, like, flirting with
oh
death.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, and then, like, when Anthony Ramos dies as John Lawrence, they have another altercation where they shake hands. And then the number after, he dies. Like, it's incredible
oh,
the way that this is thought out.
That.
Yeah.
That's
no, it's mind-boggling. Genius.
This makes me want to watch it like 1,000 times to just find every single moment. Oh,
well, it truly
God.
Never gets old because it's a 2.5 hour, or it's like, I don't know how long it is. What would you say? 2:45
yeah, like
maybe?
2.5 hours.
Yeah, 2.5. And literally, each time you watch it, you will catch up and like new things will click in your head that you're like, whoa, this makes so much more sense.
Also, you know what's so adorable is like in the ball scene where the girls go to, oh, I think it's Helpless. I think it's Pippa's song.
Oh yes.
Anthony oh, and Jasmine are like dancing in the back and they're like flirting
yeah.
on the stairs. I was fangirling so hard. I was like, yes, you guys are so cute.
That's awesome.
By the way, disclaimer, I don't know, like earlier when we were fangirling over the cast and we were like mentioning names, I hope we didn't miss anyone, but just know when we're talking about the cast, we're talking about the entire cast.
Yeah.
And if we missed a name, I'm so sorry, but we are also talking about you.
Yeah. Literally, the entire cast deserves to be recognized. Yeah. And even the original ones, because although it's being advertised that it is the original cast, there are, I think, 2 or 3
mm-hmm.
That weren't in it. And it were 2 ensemble members, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
One I know for sure is Betsy Stuxnet.
Yes, yes, yes.
And so those guys, we have to recognize them too.
Yeah.
Because they were part of that. And they were, you know, they gave it their all every night as well.
Yeah.
So I hope you guys enjoyed his interview. He's the best. And we were so excited to have him on. Thank you guys for listening to our 8th episode, like craziness. Two away from 10. So that's really exciting for us. And hopefully many more to come.
Stay safe, everyone.
Yes, please stay safe and be smart.
Sick beat, am I right? Special shout out to Nikki Torsha and Cormac Colinon for our amazing intro and outro music.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Take a Bow. We hope you enjoyed it. Feel free to subscribe and leave a rating on whatever platform you're listening to us from.
And tune in next week for another episode.
This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help of Dori Berenstein, Alan Seals, Brittany Bigelow, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network.
To learn more about this podcast, visit bpn.fm/takeabow and follow us on Instagram at takeabowpodcast, where you can contact us with any feedback, suggestions, or questions and keep up with all things Take a Bow.
See you next week.
Bye, everyone.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.